of law school, baby. It all starts here.
Caleb Parsons is 6'9", swinging 80 to shoot the 30.
Game over, season over. The dude is dead.
What? It's unbelievable.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Tuesday, April 14th, 2009. Fresh off of three failed takes of this intro and an exciting Ninjas vs. Pirates debate, we're here to bring you another podcast. My name is Adam Berry. I'm the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports. And joining me today are...
Kyle Maestri, baseball beat writer and ninja enthusiast.
Mike DiFerdinando, basketball beat writer.
Bobby Colovey, baseball beat writer.
Mike, ninja supporter?
Absolutely ninja.
Bobby. I'm a pirate supporter, but I'm afraid of ninjas.
Okay, I just want to throw it out there, firm ninja supporter here, as I've made clear before we started recording here. We got a lot to talk about on today's show. We're going to talk about Alan Chaney transferring from the basketball team. We're going to talk a little bit about the baseball team's upcoming game against FSU. A little bit about what that rivalry means and some of UF's other rivalries and all the other sports. And then in the last segment, we're going to debut a new segment, so stay tuned for that. But let's start off with the big news of today, Alan Chaney transferring. Deefer, tell us about that.
Yeah, Chaney said on Friday that he was leaving UF. The school put out a statement. Chaney averaged 3 points a game, 2 rebounds, and limited action. He got hurt halfway through the year with a foot and an ankle injury and missed most of the end of the year. He actually ended the year being suspended for the last 3 games of the NIT inexplicably. Billy Donovan never really explained why he was suspended, and it kind of ended like that. And now he's gone, so maybe there's a small question of why he's leaving.
All right, why do we think he's leaving?
I'm not buying into the conspiracy that he was like forced out because of the suspension stuff. I think it's just playing time. He saw the writing on the wall. There's better big guys coming in next year. Vernon Macklitz will be able to play. Kenny Cage is already better than him. I think he just knew the minutes weren't going to be there in the future, so he's going somewhere else.
Well, the only thing that got me, I generally agree that when a player decides to transfer, it's always about playing time. It's like in life, it's always about the money. It's always about playing time when you transfer. But in the statement that Donovan released, there was some funny wording. Like, it was like, I talked to his parents, yeah, and we mutually agreed that it would be best for him to transfer. So, like, the whole mutually thing kind of struck me as odd, and it struck me as, like, perhaps that Donovan had some concerns too and maybe pushed him out the door a little bit. I don't want to say for sure. I'm only going off of the statement. I'm just saying there was some fishy wording in the statement.
That's what I was going to ask. Between him suspending him at the end of the year and then the wording in that statement where, you know, Donovan released it first of all, Chaney didn't announce it, but then they mutually agreed to it. Do we think this was Chaney's thing first, or do you think Donovan had a bigger hand in it?
The school usually puts out a statement when someone's going to transfer. The player doesn't come out of a press conference, I'm leaving.
Right, so. Well, it wasn't just a statement, though. It was in particular, the wording of the statement, what was actually said in the statement.
I do think it was mutual. I think there was just probably a falling out, especially with the suspension and how things played out those last couple of weeks. I think there was just a big falling out, and neither one was happy with the position of, you know, where they were.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think probably Chaney was unhappy with how things were handled with playing time and the suspension. And Donovan was pretty unwilling to, like, acquiesce to anything he wanted. So they probably just couldn't get along, and they decided to part ways. So.
Yeah, I would say Chaney probably met with Donovan, and they talked, and, you know, Donovan was honest with him, saying, a lot of good guys are going to be here. I can't promise you anything. If you stay, you can work, but it's going to be an uphill battle. He's probably honest with the fact that it might not be minutes. So Donovan might have done the best thing in telling him, you know, like, maybe it's up to you, in your best interest, to go somewhere else.
It seemed early, though, that Donovan was a pretty big fan of Chaney.
Before he got hurt, he had started to do a little more. He rebounded the ball better. He started giving some kind of quality minutes towards the middle of the season.
And he got a start.
He got a start. He scored 13 points against Washington back in November during the O'Reilly Auto Parts CBE Classic. I'm pretty sure after that game, he barely got any minutes in the following after scoring 13 points, which was kind of unusual to me. At the time, I didn't really think much of it, but looking back now, I'm not sure why that was. The injury is really, really a thing for him. That derailed his entire freshman year, so I think that's the big thing.
And he finished only averaging, what, 3 points, 2 rebounds?
3 points, 2 rebounds a game.
All right, and I mean, how much are they going to miss him then if that's all they're losing and then, you know, Macklin will start playing next year? Does this affect the team?
Maybe just because of sheer numbers. They also lost a commitment from Deshaun Painter. He was an incoming big man, so now they're down 2 big guys. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're going to miss his production by any means all that much. more of a bodies thing.
All right, and in terms of the scholarships, that frees open a scholarship. How do we think they're going to use that? I know it was a poll question for our paper the other day.
I mean, I think it kind of depends on what Calathes does. If he stays in the draft and goes, then I think they're going to try to bring in a guard real quick to fill out the class. If not, they might just end up saving that scholarship because it's kind of late in the process.
Yeah, they actually talked about there's rumors that they're thinking about bringing a junior college point guard, Rico Pickett. He was a former Alabama player. I think he's going to community college in South Florida somewhere now. So that's, you could maybe see that if Calathes does leave, they'll bring in some more experience.
I like Bob's theory. I think if Calathes leaves, they'll pursue Pickett very hard to bring in another point guard. And if not, maybe they just sit on it and they have one open for next year, which honestly I think is a decent move. I'm cool with that. You don't have to fill out your scholarships and take it away from somebody next year, especially if it's with a guy who's not jumping to the NBA that's going to be here for 4 years. It's Dan Warner. So.
if Calathes does come back, they could be losing a lot next year. Werner will be gone. Calathes will definitely jump after next year. Macklin, who knows, if he has a big year, he might want to go. Mm-hmm. Same, Kenny Boyne could be a one-and-done type of player. So they could be losing a lot of guys next year, so they might want to just save it to see where they're at going into the following
season. And if guys would stay after next year, the last couple of years they've had problems with more incoming players than their scholarships to give out, so it's never a bad thing to have an extra scholarship to give away.
All right. Do we have any ideas where Chaney's going to end up? Any ideas right now?
He was born and raised in Baltimore, but played high school basketball in New London, Connecticut. So I don't really know for sure. I would think probably somewhere in the Northeast, maybe Big East.
All right. Keep an eye on that. We'll probably pursue that story, see what comes out of it. But Kyle, we wanted to talk a little bit about the amount of transfers under Billy Donovan here in the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, most recently, the names that people know are David Huertas, of course, who went to Ole Miss and has played pretty well for them. Brandon Powell, who left after the national championship year, went to Marshall.
Second national championship year.
Jonathan Mitchell, who left, went to Rutgers. And Jay Lucas, who left at the beginning of the season, and he's going to go play at Texas. So they've had some guys who, kind of struggled to find a role on the team. I'd say they all pretty much fall under that category, except for maybe Jay, who ended up transferring out of, necessity and haven't done anything great except for Huertas so far. So I don't know. What do you guys think about the recent transfer list?
I think there's always going to be transfers at a big-time program. I think everyone wants to play. Everyone wants minutes. And if they're not there, people are going to leave. It's no different than football or baseball or anything else.
I mean, I'm not sure why Huertas left. Cause
no one it, is.
There weren't too many people in front of him. He just had to wait like another year or so before he got his chance, and he just seemed unwilling to wait at all.
Well, what's funny about Huertas is like you think people are like, oh, there's this many people in front of me on the depth chart, and I want to play right away. But when you transfer, you have to sit out a year.
Yeah.
So you could have just spent that year. Like, I know you get that year back eligibility-wise, but you're still playing, at the same, rate.
And,
so
I mean, he was getting playing time as
right,
a freshman. Yeah, it wasn't, a big chunk of time, but he was still playing, and he would have seen time next year and then probably been one of the centerpieces last season if he had stayed.
I just want to point out that Brandon Powell is almost largely forced to leave after the marijuana incident
mm-hmm.
and everything with that.
And
so,
also the Vanderbilt. It was Vanderbilt where he punched
him. I mean, yeah. I'd say it's more the arrest for buying marijuana, but yeah, so
maybe, but they looked out for him. What's Donnie Jones?
Yeah,
who went to Marshall.
They took care.
They kind of, just shifted him over with Donnie Jones. But I was told that I'm told he's no longer on the Marshall team either. So
I want to say he was arrested again for something.
I don't know for sure, but I know he's not on Marshall anymore. So he's had some problems wherever he's gone.
So this is a quick question: does anyone know if Jay Lucas is going to be allowed to play next season for Texas?
He will.
He will
because he didn't play at all this year. This year was
I figured he would be allowed to play, but I just haven't heard anything about
that. I totally agree with that. I think that he should be allowed to play next year.
Yeah.
He played one exhibition game. It would have been a crime if they made him sit out again.
Absolutely. And Rutgers will start playing next season.
Mitchell
will start playing for Rutgers, I should say. Yeah. Kyle, you wanted to talk a little bit more about transfers on a broader scale, right?
Yeah. In the Billy Donovan era, there's actually been some pretty notable transfers. Like, the recent list isn't too impressive, and you have a couple guys, like you said, Jonathan Mitchell and Jay Lucas, who will first see them with their new team next season. But in this Justin Billy Donovan's era, they've lost a lot of players. One of them, the first one on my list, is a point guard, Ryan Appleby, who went to Washington and became a really good player for them. He was kind of a three-point specialist. He was a lot like Lee Humphrey, except he handled the ball better and maybe wasn't as lights out as a spot-up shooter. And he came in the same class as Lee Humphrey. That's maybe a situation where he fell behind him on the depth chart, but he ended up being really good at Washington. Huertas is on this list as somebody who proved himself after transferring. James Flight White, who played on Cincinnati. He ended up scoring like 16 points a game his senior year for them. You'll probably know him from Slam Dunk Contest. He actually was in the finals against David Lee in the McDonald's Slam Dunk Contest, the one that David Lee won. They were both Gators. There was a thing where they were Gator chomping and stuff. He came here for 1 year and ended up leaving. He ended up being drafted by the Spurs in late first round. He's kind of fallen off since then. He's not still in the league, but always a big-time dunker and freak, you know, athletic guy with, you know, a kind of unpolished game. And then the biggest one on the list to me is Mario Bogan, who played at Oklahoma State and was an absolute monster. He had, like, all kinds of, like, moving around problems, though. I believe his story is he came to Florida. He was overweight when he got here. And then he ended up leaving because of some grade problems or maybe some disciplinary things. And he went to Chipola Community College or Junior College for a year. Then he ended up landing at Oklahoma State. And in his senior year, he put up 19 points and 8 rebounds for them and was really just an amazing player for them. And then the other one on my list is a center, Muhammad Abukar, who joined the Gators in 2003 as a 4-star. He left after his sophomore season, went to San Diego State. And he averaged 15 points and 5.5 rebounds in his 2 years there and led them to an 11 seed in the 2006 tournament. So you've had some guys who have gone on to pretty good careers after leaving here. None of them were putting up big numbers. So when you see a guy like Alan Chaney or Jonathan Mitchell leave and they didn't have big numbers, maybe they'll do better somewhere else and with a better fit.
I would think especially of Jay Lucas, who did show, you know, potential last year as a scorer and, you know, sort of a big-time player, that could be an issue.
Yeah, I think Jay Lucas will do really well at Texas, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a good player, so he'll be in a system where he can run the point and probably do really well for them.
All right, do we have anything else about transfers, Kyle? You promised us a question before we recorded here about the greatest transfer ever or something
like
that.
Yeah. Deifer has figured this out, so let's not look at his paper here. But in my opinion, and there's really only one right answer to this question, the greatest transfer in college basketball history, can you guys come up with anything?
Nothing.
I saw that.
You saw the answer. Deifer correctly got it. It's Larry Bird, of course, who initially was signed on to play with Indiana. I don't think he actually ever played for them, but he committed, he signed, he went to the school, and I want to say he transferred right away. He may have played like half a season or something like that.
I want to say this is back in the day when maybe freshmen didn't play, so he went his freshman season in Indiana. Like, him and Bob Knight didn't get along at all and decided to leave after his freshman year. So he never actually played for Indiana, but he was on the freshman
year. And he has a weird story, too. He took a year off after Indiana. So I just looked on his Wikipedia page the other day. I'm not sure why. But he took a year off and, like, worked in some, like, I don't know, doing some kind of blue-collar job and was going to give up basketball. And he had some relationship with a guy at Indiana State, the coach, who said, you know, hey, you need to come play for us. And, of course, he... you know, was amazing with Indiana State, led them to an undefeated regular season, into the title game against Magic, a game that we always hear about. Mm-hmm. So that's the greatest transfer of all time, if you ask me, college basketball-wise.
Yeah, I'd be remiss to not agree. So there you go, between the players who've left UF and Larry Bird himself, you know, keep an eye on Alan Chaney maybe next year or whenever he starts playing
Larry
again.
Bird.
All right, we're going to move on from that and talk a little bit about baseball before we move into another big picture talk we're going to have here. Bobby, tell us about the baseball team, what they did over the weekend, and then the FSU game coming up.
Well, they were actually able to win a road series. First time they've done it, especially you know, this season. It was an SEC weekend versus Auburn. They got kind of off to a rough start after going ahead 5-1 and the game being suspended on Friday night because of a tornado warning. They picked up on Saturday and... they ended up allowing Auburn back in the game and losing on a walk-off home run, 8-7. Then in the doubleheader in the second game, they just exploded and won 24-2. Everyone was hitting. Josh Adams had 6 RBIs, 2 home runs.
Preston Tucker-like effort.
Yeah, it was, but nowhere near that level.
No, it was near because he had 2 home runs and he hit a double also. That's two bags away from a 3-home
run. But also 5 RBIs away.
Yeah.
That's a big 5 RBIs.
Circumstantial.
Then on Sunday, they just walked all over the place. Auburn led up 11 walks, and Florida ended up walking away 5-1.
I say they walked all over the Tigers.
I was going to throw in one more walk, but I figured
God, we missed that lead.
A little punnery.
The Gators walked all over the Tigers. Oh, God. All right. Anyway.
So they finally won the road series, something they've been talking about, something they needed to do. But now they're going to travel to Tallahassee, I guess, tonight and take on the Seminoles. Right now the series is even 1-1, although one of the games was only 5 innings because of weather. So, I mean, going into this is another must win. And everyone always gets pretty excited about the FSU-UF rivalry.
Speaking of the rivalry, I want to talk about the FSU rivalry specifically here before we talk about some ones with some other schools here. Does the FSU rivalry mean that much anymore? Let's start off here with Kyle.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it means something.
As a fan, it means a lot because you knew most of the kids who go there. It's bragging rights for students. For teams, still you kind of want the bragging rights, but in the bigger perspective, it's not that important because all you want to do is win conference games. For football, if it's coming down to, making a national championship or having that second loss, then that's big because it's the end of the year. But other than that, I think it's just a nice bragging right game, not so much meaningful as the season.
But I think that's important. That makes a good rivalry. I mean, just because a game's meaningful in the standings and stuff doesn't necessarily mean it has the underlying emotion that, these in-state rivalry games have. And I think that it gives them more pride in winning, but because you're beating kids that you played with all growing up and stuff like that. Whereas when you're playing in Georgia or Tennessee or somebody like that, it's a little bit different.
But is that emotion still here? I mean, it's not like 1996 anymore. I don't know about you guys, but I just don't feel the same kind of excitement surrounding it that I used to.
I definitely do, just because I know that, the week leading up to any FSU-UF, major sporting event, there's trash talk going between friends. And, I mean, for my, for preview coming into UF, one of the professors tells a joke making fun of FSU students. So, I mean, there's still hostility. There's still emotion going between the students. And the players are students, so they still have that emotion.
I'd argue that it's just so ingrained. Bobby, you mentioned the fans earlier. Like, even at the softball game, the second most fans of this season turned out for that, second to Alabama, which was, number one versus number four.
Well, I was trying very hard to save this point until we got into the list, but you just kind of touched on it, and I'm getting it in now while I can. The reason that the in-state rivalries are more important, in my opinion, or more, emotional and better rivalries, is because they carry over to every sport. When you talk about a school like Georgia, there's no Georgia basketball rivalry. No one cares when those two teams play. No one cares when those two teams play in other little sports. It doesn't make a difference. Especially Tennessee is especially true for that. But when FSU or Miami play Florida in anything, it could be in chess, people would still get riled up about it and talk smack to each other. And that's why the in-state rivalries are really cool.
But how much of that is because Georgia's not as good as Florida and most of those other sports, like basketball and what have you?
But that's the point. I mean,
yeah.
You don't get as hyped for a UF-Georgia game if Georgia's bad. But if it's a UF-FSU game and FSU's bad, you still get hyped because you never, ever want to lose to Florida State. When Florida State got beat the 06 2 years ago, or I guess it's 3 seasons ago now, the FSU students and fans were going nuts. They ran onto the court. There was a Facebook message. I'm pretty sure that was the same day as UF actually making the national championship game for football. So they were still bragging despite the football team having the success and about to go into a national championship game.
Yeah, I guess the thing about Florida State that's kind of cool is there's more hate for Florida State than there is for some of the other schools. Mm-hmm. So.
And, yeah, with Georgia, it's a little bit different. Georgia is definitely going to make the list when we start getting into the list and very high up there because they have a good, gymnastics rivalry, as lame as that sounds. But at least it carries over to other things. And baseball, Georgia's real good, so that carries over. Tennessee, I think, is a much weaker argument because even though it's good in football, it's not good in any other sport. Like, it's starting to blossom a little bit in basketball, but that's a last 3 years thing.
Georgia, you touched on the gymnastics. Last year, I covered the gymnastics team. And the meet's usually about 5,000, 6,000, depending on who was there. Georgia meet, 10,000. There was people in the third level for a gymnastics meet. I was blown away by this. I never thought I would ever see this when I was covering gymnastics.
And the reason I don't want to jump on schools where it's only an SEC football thing is because you can kind of argue, depending on who's good over the last couple of years, you get that rivalry environment with all these schools. Like Auburn, while they were beating Florida a couple years in a row, at SEC Media Days, their players start talking smack, and it becomes like it starts to boil and it starts to get hot with these SEC teams. So I think, and with LSU, I think you can make an argument that there's a good LSU football rivalry going now with them each winning in each of the last 3 years, winning the national championship, and they've had some good games. So I feel like just the fact that it's SEC football is creating a rivalry environment at those games. But where you can really tell is where it boils over to anything that the two schools are doing.
Yeah, well, I would argue that the smaller sports are – we're at Florida, and the smaller sports are largely inconsequential, and that football is king, and the football rivalries are the rivalries, and all the other rivalries come down because of football.
That was the point I was going to make, actually. Like, you know, if you mention a Tennessee to your average Florida student, they're just going to get angry. They would consider them a huge rivalry strictly because of football.
Yeah. Right, but that's why I'm not going to put, like, Kentucky on the list,
okay,
because – Kentucky, there's a great basketball rivalry. I think that's the best basketball rivalry for UF. But because they can't compete in football, I wouldn't even touch that. But if you're talking about FSU and Miami, there's still a good football rivalry there. It's not like you're giving up football by adding those schools.
There's actually a great Kentucky-Florida soccer rivalry brewing. Because this season, I believe Kentucky went up 2-0 or 3-0. And after the third or second goal, whatever it was, Kentucky, whoever just scored the goal from Kentucky, they started run down the sideline right past the players, gator chopping them, which sent UF fans and players crazy. They ended up coming back to win, and after the goal winning shot, there's a great picture of Kentucky's goalie flicking off the UF players.
Oh, nice!
So
nice.
That rivalry is getting going, but I mean it's a soccer one, and every time you talk to a coach, they always say when they're playing an SEC opponent, oh, this is a great rivalry game. Like, we have a rival. There are rivals. Every SEC opponent's their rivals.
As much as I love the smaller sports, I really don't think any of this matters. The reason those kids feel that way that play the smaller sports is because of football.
No.
Because they're football fans.
You need that underlying just detest for the other school. Because those are the great rivalries. If we removed ourselves from the Florida situation, we would start talking about rivalries across the country where the schools just hate each other. Like Duke UNC just hates each other.
Ohio State, Michigan.
Yeah, and they hate each other in everything.
All right, but Duke UNC is because of basketball, and Ohio State, Michigan is because of football.
Right. Well, yeah, no, but I'm saying I haven't made an argument for a team that doesn't have a football rivalry with them, right?
Bobby just made soccer Kentucky rivalry.
I was just throwing that out for the mix.
All right, so let's get to the list. We've been jumping around it for a little while. Who do we think are UF's biggest rival schools? Let's go with three.
Okay. Do we need an order at this point?
I mean, preferably.
All right. My order is FSU, number one, Georgia, number two, and Miami, number three.
All right. Deeper?
I'm going to go Georgia first, Tennessee second, and Florida State third.
I'm almost going to seem a little hypocritical because I have argued for the deep-lining hatred for FSU, but Georgia's my number one rivalry game. Then FSU, then Tennessee.
All right, I'm actually going to go completely opposite of what two I already have written down right here on my paper. I'm going to say FSU number one, Tennessee second, and Georgia third.
I hate the Tennessee pick, guys. Yeah. I really hate the Tennessee pick.
Why?
Because what other sport do they get? The two schools get fired up about.
It doesn't
each other?
Matter.
Yes, it does.
No,
matter.
Football is everything. It doesn't matter.
Do you really think basketball? Do you really think they don't get fired up for basketball? Deeper when you went to
absolutely.
It's very new though. That's very very new.
But it's still there. It doesn't matter if it's new or not.
What was your third one?
Miami.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later. Let's talk about Tennessee now, though. Like, why are you so...
I don't think you can discount Tennessee.
I think you can and should discount Tennessee. And also, FSU, like, the baseball rivalry with FSU is also very good because they do the thing where they play a three-game series. They play one game in Gainesville, one game in FSU, one game in Jacksonville every year. Those are the kind of things that make rivalries really cool, doing unique stuff. That's why the Florida-Georgia game's sweet because you do it in Jacksonville every year and it has an identity of its own.
Wait. This upcoming football season, what's the one game in the swamp that everyone's going to want to see, that everyone's going to want to be at? It's not the Florida State game. It's the Tennessee game.
It doesn't matter, though, because this is
How do you say that?
This is like USC and UCLA. That's the most clear. No, listen to me. That That's not a rivalry. What's
you
what are you knowing?
You can pay. What are you comparing?
USC. Well, I don't know. Maybe you're USC, make a point. UCLA is one of the greatest rivalries.
And
unfortunately, lately UCLA hasn't been that good. But it was one of the greatest rivalries, and it's starting to become one with new Azul coming back
this
and
to me.
Trying to bring
do
UCLA
back. Do we all agree
out.
That USC UCLA is a great rivalry?
It's a very
that's
good rivalry.
Okay.
I don't think it's elite by any means.
Was it a top 10 rivalry?
Maybe.
Yes, it's
sure.
definitely a top 10 rivalry. Is the answer to that question. And USC cannot hang with UCLA on the basketball court, and UCLA can't hang with USC on the football field, really. But when they beat each other and upset each other, it's like winning like the biggest game of all time. And the schools hate each other so much for regional reasons. That's what makes the rivalry great with them.
There's no hate in Southern California like there is in the SEC.
Unbelievable. You're such a homer right now.
No. My biggest problem with Miami is that they don't play each other enough. So there's years where they might not even play each other, period, in any sport. And I feel
not
like
in any sport, in football.
Well, I'm saying in any sport. Well, I mean, I guess baseball they play every year.
Yeah.
But like, for the most part, you don't have to play. They never have to play Miami. It's not like we're like, we need to get that Miami rivalry in the thing. And for it to be a rivalry for me, just because you hate another team doesn't make it a rivalry. You got to actually play this team and make sure you want to play this team every year.
All right, well, I'm okay. Yeah, I'm by far the least confident about the Miami one because that was my third team. So I kind of get that argument. But I think, like, FSU and Georgia have to be 1 and 2 in
I
any
agree.
Order.
Defend
yourself. No,
yeah,
go
I say Tennessee because, first of all, I'm closer to that rivalry, just personally. But also, this comes to me once again from covering softball. When Florida played Tennessee this season, who was in the press box for those two games? Tim Tebow, Urban Meyer. This school is starting
just,
to care about that rivalry
no,
even
that's
more.
Just because that's just because Tennessee was good this year in softball. They're the next best team besides Alabama, like in the East this year. But like historically, it's been other teams coming out for softball. Like LSU is the big team in softball the last few years until Florida knocked them off, and they haven't been as good. And the Tennessee thing's really boiling over right now because Lane Kiffin's an idiot. But
no.
I mean, that's not like a deep-seated thing that's going to last for like generations.
No, the Tennessee thing is deep-seated. Think back to the 90s. Think back to the Peyton Manning years at Tennessee. Peyton Manning was, 30-something points at halftime in Florida, and Florida beat them by like 60 or something.
Peyton Manning never beat Florida.
I know, but that was always a big deal.
Right, because Peyton Manning was great and Tennessee was great, but I don't. Do you think Tennessee fans were looking at it like,
yeah.
Oh, Florida's amazing? Like,
I think Tennessee fans care that Peyton Manning never beat Florida, absolutely.
And I don't know if it's
I
just
think they care more that he never won a national championship.
Well,
but
yeah.
I mean,
okay, well.
I don't know if it was just because when I was up there, but people in Tennessee hate Florida, I would say. And I don't know, you know, maybe it's a
but
little
half
less.
The country hates Florida
well,
right now.
That. Yeah, that's why I'm saying maybe it's because it was when I was up there. But these people take an active interest in hating Florida. So it's not just people down here hating Tennessee because of Lane Kiffin.
People at USC, or at USC, at UCF hate Florida, but who cares? That's not the point. Like, they hate Florida because they're overshadowed and they're an in-state school. But, history is really important in this to me. And the FSU-Miami things, they've always been around, and they always will be around.
With Tennessee, I really do feel it does carry over. Even if people aren't as excited about, you know, a UF-Tennessee tennis match, they still want UF to win. Like, they still, like, are more passionate about that than it when they're playing, like, Mississippi or Mississippi State.
Well, yeah.
That brings out, like, just the name Tennessee brings out the passion in UF fans. That's why, and the importance of the SEC. I think is why I put them as number 3.
And I really respect the Miami rivalry. I think it's a great rivalry. But I would also argue that the Tennessee rivalry is way more important to Florida fans than the Miami one is. It's more important to beat Tennessee in any sport than it is to beat Miami in any sport.
I completely disagree with that. I think if they lost to Miami in football next year in a bowl game, that would be way worse than losing to Tennessee, and people would be way more upset. But
I completely disagree with that.
When Brock Berlin transferred away and then beat UF, that's not like the worst possible thing that could possibly happen for a Florida fan?
No, it's not the worst possible thing that could possibly happen.
What gets much worse than that? Your quarterback transfers away from your school, goes to a rival, and then beats you? How does it get much worse than that emotionally?
I mean, it's bad, but I just think that being in a conference, being in the SEC East, like Florida and Georgia and Tennessee all, I think that little trifecta right there is the big rivalry in Florida. I think that's it.
So you're placing more importance on
I think the
conference
is extremely important.
More than the state.
Because the conference rivalries matter in any sport because of it. You have to win your conference.
The conference rivalries are built in. Just by being in the same conference as a school that's good at other stuff, you're going to have a rivalry because you play each other all the
time. But isn't that how
this
all the great rivalries are?
This is deeper than that. I don't...
That's Duke, North Carolina. That's, I mean... That's
yeah, I
Texas, you know, Oklahoma.
I understand that. Usually because geography-wise, they're going to be in the same conference, but I don't think you have to have that for it to be a good rivalry.
Can you think of a great rivalry that's not in the same conference?
No. UFFSU. Like, I don't know. What do you want me to say here? Like, you had FSU too, so obviously you don't think that
No, FSU's a great rivalry.
Let's talk about the FSU rivalry a little bit. Like, what, it's just because it's in-state, Kyle? You made the argument of in-state for Miami. You know, is that the same thing, history and in-state? Is that your...
Yeah, I think, like, I just think we should look at this a little bit with more perspective and not in the now. Because, like I said, these rivalries have always been here and they always will be. The other ones, the conference ones that are only rivalries because they're conference-based, are going to be cyclical based on which teams are good. Georgia will always be there. They do something cool. They go play in a neutral site every year. They're very close regionally. So that rivalry will always be there. But like for these other schools, it could be Tennessee now and it's going to be LSU real soon. And then after that, it could be Auburn.
Right. Do any of us disagree with that? Or?
I think Tennessee has the rivalry with Tennessee has been around for a while. That one's now built ingrained into the fans that you have to hate Tennessee. Right now, most fans don't hate Mississippi or Mississippi State or Vanderbilt or anything like that just because.
Vanderbilt.
But nobody's talking about those teams.
Okay, I'm just saying, like, if those teams become good in 5 years, sure, you still want your team to beat them. But Tennessee, even if Tennessee's down and Vanderbilt's up, the rivalry with Tennessee is still going to be more powerful.
I think because the teams, Georgia and Tennessee, are in the East and you play them every year no matter what, that's more important than LSU or Alabama because you play them maybe once every couple of years.
If Kentucky gets really good in football all of a sudden, I think that will be more, that will be a better rivalry than Tennessee across the board.
No.
No?
No. Because it would be new and it's not the same thing. The Tennessee football rivalry has been there for a long, long time.
Plus, rivalries do have to develop from somewhere. You know, these long-seeded rivalries do have to come from somewhere. And I think what you're seeing now in the last, you know, 10 years or whatever it was you said, is the beginning of a rivalry that will last and will become as strong as the FSU one.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm not buying the Tennessee one at all. I'm okay with putting Georgia number one. That doesn't bother me. I'm like, I can see that argument. But Tennessee going higher than third, I just, like, I don't like it at all. And even in third, I don't love it. I think Miami is just much better. I think at one point they're going to start playing each other in football again, and it won't even be a discussion. Is that the deal breaker for you guys? If they played in football every year, would you think
partially,
that's better?
I think for a rivalry to be important, you have to play every year. I think it's important.
I would agree, yeah.
I mean, I don't really care about football. It's just that no sport is like that, like, you know, into that rivalry enough to make sure you schedule them. Whereas FSU, every sport schedules FSU, I'm pretty sure, except maybe gymnastics. I don't think they do, but every sport pretty much schedules FSU because they need that rivalry again. Miami, it's not that important. No one really cares. When Miami comes to town, yeah, sure, everyone wants to beat Miami. Everyone wants to have that bragging, right? But it's not like, oh, why are we playing Miami this year? I want to be able to, you know, rub it in their face that we beat them again.
Well, if football just doesn't lend itself to doing that, you can't schedule two out-of-conference powerhouses and, like, come out alive, especially playing in the SEC, the best conference in football. I mean, you see, like, Notre Dame, who has rivalries with school, they don't schedule those same schools every year because they can't afford to.
Well, Notre Dame's a joke, but Florida used to play Miami every year. All right. Through the 80s, they played Miami every year. And during that time, it was a great rivalry. And I think to get back to that point, they have to schedule them again.
Well, this goes back to you looking at it more historically and us looking more, you know, in the now and everything like that. But let's talk about the Georgia rivalry a little bit because I had it third and some of you guys had it first. Make your argument for it being the biggest rivalry.
I think within the SEC East and within the SEC as a whole, it's always the most important game, Florida-Georgia.
I don't care if Georgia or UF left the SEC, there would still be hatred between UF and Georgia fans. There's always going to be that hatred, and no matter in any sport. It's that same type of hatred that is FSU. Unfortunately, there's not the the familiarity with other students there, but there's still that, you know, that hatred.
I'll concede that, you know, it's absolutely the biggest football game of the year, but you said it spills over into other sports. Do we really think, like, basketball fans
No, but
care?
That's the only one. Like, gymnastics is big in, baseball it's big in. It's big in, like, the other smaller sports, I think. But here's the thing about Georgia, and I think it's a perfect storm of kind of everything. It's, like, it's close enough regionally where you're recruiting some of the same kids and you're close enough, you have friends at other schools. They do something cool to give it an identity. They play at a neutral site for football games. It's a football rivalry, so it's, like, the biggest of sports in the South. So I think it has, like, all the elements. And I also want to say I've been slightly swayed on Tennessee. I still don't think they should be higher than three, But I don't think it's ridiculous to have him over Miami at this point. You guys make a good argument. And there's a lot of stuff that's recently happening where this could take off. If Lane Kiffin holds a job for more than 2 years, it could really get interesting. And the new Keith Richardson thing isn't helping anything. So there are some elements there. Bruce Pearl is turning the basketball program around. So maybe this is the birth of a rivalry. You're right. They have to start somewhere. But I can't possibly put them in front of Georgia or FSU.
I certainly don't either.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing,
I would.
The thing for me about the Georgia thing, I'm not sure you guys have ever been to the Florida-Georgia game.
Yeah.
Jacksonville.
Have you?
No.
Well, Bob and I have.
The atmosphere is a big deal to me. I think that's largely what's carrying it for me.
I don't actually want you to make that argument. I'm on your side. It's because I hated that atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Outside of the game, there's a bunch of drunk fans arguing and going back and fighting with each other.
But that's part of it.
But that's part of the thing, but as for college atmosphere, I think if you go, you know, home and away each year, the atmosphere is going to be crazy.
I agree that they should home and home would be way cooler than a neutral site game.
Well, that's what every other. You're changing the status quo to make it a neutral site game. The atmosphere is a joke. Don't even make the atmosphere argument, because if you've been to a game in the swamp against a big school or any of these other SEC schools, the atmosphere is intense. The stadium's tightly packed. Everyone hates each other. Everyone's there for the game. When you go to Jacksonville, everybody gets drunk. There are people there who don't really care about the game. How many friends do you know that just live in a school, go to like FSU, UCF, who go to the game just to get drunk and have a good time? The stadium's not built the same way to have a closer feel to it. It's an NFL stadium. And the atmosphere there is not good.
Well, I mean, part of that is the neutral site. That's going to happen in any neutral site game. The in-game atmosphere won't necessarily be as good. But the all the surrounding game stuff, I think, is just as cool. Just as intense as a home game would be.
The atmosphere of the game, I don't think is that good at all.
Especially
in other ones.
But before the game,
atmosphere with like opposing fans going back and forth, that is where the rivalry really is coming from.
But
I don't think in the game it's not that good.
My problem is just that there's so many people there that don't really care one way or another. Or there are people that are quote unquote fans that are are really fans of drinking. That's what they're really the biggest supporters of. Because it's way cooler as a fan to go into another school's territory, like to go to LSU decked out in Gator stuff and talk crap with the fans there. That's
absolutely
way more intense, and that's way cooler pregame atmosphere than, like, I don't know, toasting shots with somebody of the other team and seeing who can drink faster, and that's like, you know, everyone's kind of buddy-buddy and like united in getting drunk in Jacksonville.
The argument I made with Tennessee before, and I want to see if you guys agree with this, I don't feel like, you know, Georgia, just as a school, you know, as a program, incites quite as much hatred as either FSU or even Tennessee right now. I'm guessing you guys disagree with
Tennessee's this. Fresher in everyone's mind. I think Georgia incites Florida and Florida State incite just as much hate.
Yeah, I do too. Maybe that's a more respectful rivalry. I don't
Georgia
know if we can make that argument.
Tennessee.
Georgia's more respectful. Like, it's not as, like, venomous. But I think, like, there's a lot of – beating Georgia carries, I think, more weight than beating Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Yeah. I think – but I really do think the hatred is there for Georgia. People really don't like Georgia fans. They don't want to see them. People will make fun of how, you know, Georgia fans dress, despite the fact that UF fans dress the same way, but in orange and blue, which is all
the
that better.
Shorts debacle.
Yeah. Actually,
which I'm still unsure of where that came from. I would like to see where that came from, because that's part of the history, is that they've carried this jean short thing for this whole time, and I'm still not sure why people from UF are associated with jean short.
I take back my respectful comment, by the way, because like just last year there was the whole Gator Stomp thing,
yeah,
and then like Urban Meyer calls the timeouts. Like, these schools don't like each other, and it's even carrying over to the players and the coaches. So I mean, I think Georgia's really, really the best rivalry in the SEC, for sure.
Actually, I have an anecdote about the Georgia thing, which will contradict my point that I made before, but this is too good to not tell.
Yeah,
I had a TA in one of my classes, was a pastor, like a, you know, Lutheran reverend or something like that. That guy, he stood up and he said, I don't use the word hate a lot. He said, I want you to hate the devil, and I want you to hate anything that comes out of Athens, Georgia. And I feel like that's the attitude that does prevail around here a little bit and leads people to believe that the Georgia rivalry is so strong.
I really want to go to the Auburn-Alabama game and see what that's like, because that just seems like a great rivalry. And I want to see, being there in person, how that compares to the Florida-Georgia rivalry, because I think that's the only one in the SEC that can even threaten the UF-Georgia rivalry. And it's unfortunate that both teams haven't been good at the same time in the last couple of years to really, you know, incite, like, keep that rivalry alive.
Right, well, I've never been to Auburn, Alabama, but I have a friend that goes – one friend that goes to Auburn and one friend that actually goes to Alabama, so I've kind of heard about this. From all accounts, Auburn, Alabama is by far the best rivalry in the SEC, and people genuinely hate each other.
I've never been there, and I'd like to get a firsthand perspective, but without that firsthand perspective, just my knowledge of the rivalries, I would put Auburn, Alabama in front of UF.
Absolutely.
I think that's the best one in the SEC.
You can argue that's the best rivalry in any sport in the country.
I think North Carolina basketball probably.
I mean, yeah, you say,
what do you guys think is the best
rivalry? It's a top
rivalry?
Five.
I mean, I said Duke Carolina basketball. What do you guys think?
Ohio State Michigan's very good. We all don't like to talk about it because we feel like it's not good football, whereas like Duke UNC, more times than not, is probably going to reveal a national title contender for basketball, and Auburn, Alabama, historically, are really good football programs, but I don't know.
I have to give the nod to Michigan and Ohio State, too, as much as we all like to hate on the Big Ten and whatnot. It's, the tradition's just there.
I go with Ohio State and Michigan, and because it's a rivalry in everything, and it rolls over to the band halftime performances. Who's going to have the better band performance at halftime? That's how big this rivalry is.
Although, I want to say that Auburn-Alabama, I think, is maybe the most hate-filled rivalry in all of college sports. People in that state die over that game.
Well, one of the big things is that, Tuscaloosa and Auburn, there's nothing going on.
Yeah,
that's it. All they have
for that.
Families are divided.
Yeah, it's just Auburn and Alabama. That's it.
I'm putting Duke UNC as my best, though, for basketball. Then I'm going to go Ohio State, Michigan, and I don't know if I could even give you a third. Texas Oklahoma is pretty good.
Yeah, I like Texas Oklahoma. You're not going to throw out USC, UCLA?
I mean, I think that's definitely a top 10 and possibly top 5. I would make that argument if we were extending the list a little further. But
the funny thing is I was talking to some softball girls, when I was doing the story about the Florida-FSU rivalry, and, a couple of them said, oh, yeah, we were really in tune to the USC-UCLA rivalry out there. But then one of them, I think it was Megan Bush, said, oh, yeah, that was a big rivalry out there. I wasn't really that involved in it. But that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. If you were in the state of Florida growing up, you were in tune to the Florida-Florida State rivalry.
No, because South Florida, this is the talk I just had with you guys. Like, living in South Florida, people would always talk about that, and I was always a Miami fan growing up, so I didn't really care about the UF-FSU rivalry.
All right, well, I never lived in South Florida, but in your South Florida elementary school class, was Miami in the minority, though, between Florida State and Florida?
Well,
as a small proportion?
Yes, it was.
It depended on the time. When FSU and UF were the great teams in, mid-90s, everyone was either a UF or an FSU fan. Then all of a sudden, 2000, when Miami, South Florida's big home or big bandwagon fans for record, when UM started getting good, all you saw were UM jerseys. No one cared about UF. No one cared about FSU. Everyone was in Miami. Now if you go down there, there's only UF fans. I don't know what happens. They just love to jump on these bandwagons.
Well, I have a question for you two South Florida gentlemen. How does the Florida State-Miami rivalry in relation to the Miami-Florida, Florida State-Florida?
The Miami-Florida State rivalry is great. I don't know if I'd put it in front of FSU-UF. But it's really close.
My biggest problem with it is that Miami's a private school. So there's a lot of people who aren't going to Miami because of the cost and they're going to FSU. So it's kind of not that same. Like, you can either go to UF or FSU because you're in-state and those are your choices. It's you got to have the money to get to Miami.
But there's still fans of Miami who don't go to college there. Isn't South Florida have a lot of Miami fans that are just, like, locals?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for Miami fans, FSU is their rivalry game. Like, that's bigger than, like, UF would not compare to FSU for them. Like, they want to win against FSU. That's their game. So, I might give it a little bit in front of UF-FSU. I'm not really sure. It's really close to me.
All right, I think that's is that it for our rivalry talk here?
Poor FSU, huh?
You
want to
talk a little more
FSU?
Michigan
games they have to play every year, and it's rough for
them.
Well,
they play in the ACC.
Right,
so
it's a conference game, but
wait, are you saying that
they have to.
Oh, okay, I thought you were saying, like, they play in the ACC, it's a joke.
No, they have to.
I mean,
so, just like Florida has to play Georgia every year.
But as a fan of that school, you have to worry about beating both those teams every year. You
especially
get
in football.
You,
where,
so.
Oh, I don't like how they're changing it now. They used to, Miami and Florida State always play the first game of the season. Now they're moving away from that.
Are they really?
Yeah, I like that.
I do too. You like the kickoff with the 13-10 terrible game with 300 yards of total offense. Nobody can move the ball. That's what I look forward to on the opening weekend for college football.
I mean, I definitely prefer, like, opening weekend, that's I mean, it's cool that like that's the first game you play, but you don't want to be playing that meaningful of a game early in the season. You want to be playing it at the end where everything's riding on that game. Like the UF-FSU game, that's one of the greatest parts. It's because if FSU upsets, you know, UF either last year or, you know, in 2006, that ruins the national championship hope. So much is riding on that despite FSU season already being over.
Okay, but the same – the Florida State Miami thing, it kicks off this season. I like that. It kicks off the season. There's pageantry. It's very important. So the season's meaningful right away.
And then everyone forgets about it.
As a college football fan, I don't want to sit there and watch Miami beat the crap out of, like, Temple.
Yeah,
40
so that's what opening weekend's for. No. Opening weekend is for 62-3 games. That's what I want on opening weekend for college football. Every fan thinks their big school team's the greatest because they just beat down some scrub. And Bobby's right that heading into – the play or into that wish there were playoffs heading into the postseason system of conference championships and then their bowl games, it has so much more of an impact at the end of the year. You know where your team stand at that point. It's not like a retroactive thing where you have to go back and apply it to the first game and see what it meant 10 weeks later.
As a college football fan, I like seeing big games throughout the season, including the opening weekend. And I think that's a cool thing. What are the big games, the opening weekend you always look forward to? Are there one or two like big matchups that are kind of rare to see, like the Alabama's and Clemson's of the world who
I'm all for a great game early, but if I'm a coach, I'm never, ever scheduling a conference game and that big of a rivalry game that early. Your team's not in midseason form, obviously, in the first game. You don't want to be putting so much on your conference championship on that early season game.
I agree that it's stupid for both schools, but I think it's cool to watch.
The other thing I want to mention, though, you said as a college football fan, you're not necessarily thinking as a fan of that school.
No.
Like, Kyle was coming from the argument, like, a fan of that school wants to see their team just whoop up on Western Kentucky.
Okay. Right.
You want to see good football.
As an impartial college football fan who doesn't care about Florida State or Miami.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. Okay, I can understand that a little better then. You're not coming from their perspective. Just as a third party looking in, it's cool. But, I mean, you still get a lot of – not on opening weekend, but there's still a lot of games that end up being towards the beginning of the slate. Like, you get the UF-Tennessee game. You get the Red River Shootout at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. So, I think the rivalry games are fairly spaced out. And then you get, you know, at the end, you get USC, UCLA, and you get Ohio State, Michigan. So, does Auburn-Alabama play?
It's the last game. Okay. All right, is that it about rivalries? This is maybe the most heated we've ever gotten in this room.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that it's really hot in here, so that's not helping me out here. All right, we're going to move here into our last segment, a brand new segment. It's called Gator Guarantees. Kyle, why don't you explain it for the listeners?
All right, we're going to do something. Again, all we do is steal from other people's work on this podcast.
Borrow, like to say.
Borrow, adapt, however you want to describe what we're going to do here. But I first got the idea from Mike and Mike. They do something that's... I forget the exact name, but something like guarantees that are sure to go wrong.
Yeah.
The locks. Or something
yeah,
like that.
And it's during football season.
Yeah,
mostly.
They do it Fridays before football games.
And they just make predictions that are going to happen over the next week that are a little out there that'll probably go wrong, but they're trying to be ballsy and say something that, you know, people can kind of hold them accountable for. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to adapt it to Gator Sports, of course, is what we do here. We want it to be something that happens over a week span if we can, but if it's particularly timely, we'll allow things like that. So mine is going to be, I have two baseball ones, that Preston Tucker will win Freshman of the Week again this week, and that Patrick Keating will get the start against FSU tomorrow or today, depending on when you're listening to this, and he will do poorly again and probably lose a starting spot altogether.
My guarantee is going to be that walk-on running back Chris Scott will score a touchdown in the Orange and Blue game this Saturday.
It's a Gary Russell-esque prediction considering the Super Bowl. All right, Bobby?
Mine is going with the UF gymnastics team. They are heading to the national championship on Thursday. That's the first round, and they are with, I think, Oklahoma, Stanford, Penn State, Georgia, and LSU. And the top three teams move on. And they're always a lock to move on to the Super Six. I'm going to predict they do not. They finished fourth and do not get to move on to the second day.
All right, and I guess I'll round it out here with some softball stuff. I'm going to say that the UF pitchers, Stephanie Brombacher and Stacey Nelson, in the next four games, the ones they will play before our next Tuesday podcast, they will get 44 strikeouts combined in those games.
That's so much more impressive than 40.
I'm still not impressed. I want 50.
They average like 8.5 a game. That'll be getting 11
I want
a game.
60. Give me 60 strikeouts. I'll be impressed.
That's impossible.
It's ridiculous. All right. And do we have any comments about our picks? Do you want people to make fun of us if they're wrong or anything? What are we What are we expecting from the readers if we're wrong?
Email in if we're wrong.
I won't be wrong, so you don't have to worry about that.
I'll probably be wrong. Defer's definitely going to be wrong. So
you have been out there, man. Chris Scott is the story of the spring. He's a walk-on. He's going to play special teams this year. The coaches love him. It's a lock.
You were wrong. Preston Tucker will not be SEC Freshman of the Week. He will be Player of the Week.
I could be wrong. Bobby's right.
But Patrick Keaton will suck.
Wow.
All right, you heard it here. Tune in next Tuesday's show. We'll revisit these picks and make some more for the following week. Also, check out our show Friday. We're going to talk a lot about the football game, the Orange and Blue game this weekend. Possibly some gymnastics stuff that Bobby alluded to a little bit earlier. And we'll talk about some softball as well. Anything else before we wrap it up here?
We got some reader mail that I wanted to address, right?
The email we received, what, two nights ago or last night, I believe it was?
Yeah, from Elizabeth Graham.
It was from Elizabeth Graham. Let me get it out here and read it. It was addressing you.
Yes.
Fitting you should remember that, Kyle. It was about what you said about nothing to fill your, I don't know what you exactly said, nothing to fill the hole in your heart or whatever.
I said I gave I think it was my Reggie Nelson to baseball for filling the hole in my life and schedule that was previously occupied with college basketball and college football. And she said that I should be a little bit more involved with the softball team then because they're number one and they're great. If you know me, you know I really do love the softball team. I covered them last year, so I got to know them pretty good. And they are tremendous. Maybe we don't talk about them enough. As it starts to head to the postseason, I'm sure we will more. But during the season, they're just so good, there's nothing to talk about. They just win every game.
Mm.
The biggest thing to me is that we have a female listener. I'm impressed.
That's not a girlfriend or a mother.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle to get my girlfriend to listen to it. She never wants to hear it.
Yeah, that's big. We're making headway here on the Alligator Sports Podcast.
All right, yeah, so keep sending in your reader mail. We'll address it on the show, reply to it, and hopefully respond to it. We'll definitely start talking about softball more, like Kyle said.
Speaking of asking for feedback, I'm going to throw something out there. We're trying to change the name of the podcast from the Alligator Sports Podcast, which is as generic and vanilla as it gets, and we're kind of having a hard time brainstorming stuff. We wanted to have something to do with at least being college journalists and examining the college scene. It could be Gator-related. I'm not necessarily sold on that.
Mm.
But if you guys come up with anything at home, send it in. Don't let me down. Yeah, if anybody's out there listening, we want to hear from you guys. So just throw some ideas out there.
Absolutely.
I'm cool with Bobby and Friends.
Bobby and Friends? That's all right. Around the Bobby?
Yeah, sure.
All right, that wraps it up for today's show. Check in Friday for our next podcast. And thanks for listening.